Hello, everyone. God bless America and God bless Texas. You're listening to Riding Right with the Raiders once again with
Caleb and
Kevin Allen.
Today we have a special guest.
Hello, I'm Drake Serpas. I am chair of the Sam Houston State University College Republicans, and I'm also chief of staff to the Federation of Texas College Republicans. Thank y'all for having me on.
Of course. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, man. I met you up at the Capitol not long ago for the first time, and that was quite an experience to actually have all the Federation together in one room like that.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. I kind of like having everyone around, like from different parts of the state. We don't only meet up to discuss the future of the Federation. We meet up to also socialize and see what other Republicans or college Republicans are sort of doing.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's good because, you know, just as we heard at the Capitol, a lot of times people that go into politics and become successful, they don't necessarily go in knowing every little detail and knowing everything, every single bill. They learn as they go, they hone their skills, and it's their passion for their country, their state, and their duties that really shapes them as a conservative or Republican leader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you summed it up pretty well there. I got into this maybe 2 years ago. I've always really had a passion for politics, but it wasn't until I joined this organization, that is College Republicans, that my passion really took off. My philosophy is, I can't just sit around and talk about politics. Like, I actually have to go out there and do something. And that's really what I, as a college Republican, I strive to do. You know, we door knock, we volunteer for local Republican candidates. We work very closely with local Republicans, just helping out wherever we can, whether, it's getting them coffee, handing out desserts, or actually going out door knocking, doing registrar training, deputy registrar training, to help people register to vote. I've liked what I've done so far. I'm pretty proud of it.
Yeah, and that's really important stuff. People, in my experience, and I think Caleb will agree, even here at Texas Tech, there's a distinct disassociation from politics and caring about what's going on in your city, your state. And for me, you're right. The people that I want in office, the people we need to get in offices, are the ones that don't just talk about it. They take action. Same way I took action when I went to the Capitol with some stuff I had to deal with. Stuff like you've done and a lot of other younger Republicans, because in my opinion, people weren't meant to make a career out of sitting in a political office.
I do have to agree with Drake. I also grew up Republican in New Mexico and grew up in one of the most red counties in the state. Even though we are a blue state, I get a lot of backlash because of that, but it makes up for it because I'm doing the work here in Texas, and I'm proud to live in a red state. And there's nothing wrong with trying to do what I want to do with my country. And I feel like JFK said it best.
It's not what the country can do for you, but what you can do for your country.
Yes.
Correct.
That is it.
Yep. And that's right. You moved to Texas. You were experiencing suppression in your own state. You came to Texas where you could pick up the torch and keep going. So that's taking action. All right. So in Texas, and this is a hot topic, it's always going to be a hot topic because we border Mexico. But there's a lot happening now in Texas. I've got family in Harlingen, in Brownsville, Texas. I used to go into Monterrey, Mexico a lot, and then I follow pretty closely what's going on mainly because I'm a college student with insomnia, but it's important. It matters. And we're seeing something that we have not seen in a long time. When you talk about deportation, you know, it started out with just people getting sent back to their country. They were here illegally. And now, if you talk about California, Los Angeles looks like a complete war zone.
Yeah, the LA riots was actually something I wanted to talk about. Just, you know, the hypocrisy of there's one politician in particular. It's Hillary Clinton. They're going back to their same old rhetoric that they used in 2020 when the riots were happening all across the country. They're describing these riots as peaceful demonstrations. And it's just, it's like deja vu, seeing these politicians kind of go back on what they say from 2020. And then when January 6th happened, them calling it like a violent insurrection. And then they're going back to their previous rhetoric when it's their side burning down a city again.
Yeah.
It's just kind of crazy.
You know, and not only that, not long ago, Trump got a lot of heat for, what was the term they used? He was instigating or initiating and calling for riots. That's not what he did. What we have seen out of California is calling for riots. They were literally told, start fighting back. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So... it's funny Absolutely. How all that gets spun.
Yeah, we saw that with a sitting councilwoman. I forget what her name is, but I saw the story where she literally called for escalation and violence to take their streets back or something, you know, similar to that. And it's just crazy seeing this kind of rhetoric. You know, in a country we thought our political leaders were, you know, peaceful. You know, you would never think that you would see politicians call for violence in America.
Yeah, it's something that you never would have expected. And I completely agree. And one of the best things that I think back on that reminds me of what's going on in LA right now is the LA riots that started in the 90s with the police brutality, and with what's going on now, it's in all honesty kind of similar, because ICE is deporting Mexicans from Mexico, and the Mexicans in LA are saying, no, you're not going to do this, but because of the Trump mandate, they've all got to go.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing is, these riots, they weren't initiated by, like, a deportation. It was an ICE raid, but it was an ICE raid on, I think it was, like, suspicion of cartel activity, money laundering, selling drugs, that kind of stuff. So it wasn't necessarily a deportation that kind of sparked this.
Yeah, no, we've had the same stuff happens here in Lubbock, Texas all the time. In fact, I attended a Lubbock area Republican women's meeting, I want to say maybe a month, maybe two months ago. And what we talked about was a lot of the drug trafficking, the money laundering, counterfeit bills. It was pretty much the DA that was there talking. Or the DEA. And it was just, you know, when ICE gets involved, it's never an automatic call for deportation. There's always something attached to it, and it's usually tied to gang violence, gang activity. And I think now we're starting to see a much broader spectrum of everything happening, and I'm really hoping Americans are waking up and realizing, say, hey, They weren't lying. This stuff is happening. It was real the whole time. These people aren't here to protect us because, you know, used to the Democrats, they were all for protecting the U.S. And I mean, even there's footage of former President Barack Obama talking about deporting people. And now it's just kind of like, well, what's happened? What has changed in the Democratic Party that y'all went from being for America to wanting it to be invaded?
Yeah, that I can't put like a – I can't put a finger on. I have an idea, but, you know, you can't really say anything without – because – I have an idea, but I'm not 100% sure, and I don't ever want to claim something without being 100% sure that that is what's really going on.
Yeah, and I'm the same way. I've looked into some stuff happening here in Texas. I don't know if you're familiar with the whole Colony Ridge and Liberty – is it Liberty County? Yeah, Liberty County. Situation with the illegals and the land getting bought, the houses getting built, and illegal immigrants taking loans. That's apparently what's happening. It's been posted online on different platforms. But, you know, not physically being there, it's hard to really know what's really causing all this, who's letting these people in, what's the agenda, what are they trying to accomplish here? What I am interested in a little bit more, though, is, you know, do you think that when election season comes around, because it's almost here, that we are going to see a much weaker blue California?
That I am not too sure on. Because the era of Trump, it's a very interesting era. Because Trump himself, when he runs, he's a very strong candidate. However, during the midterms, Trump is such a boogeyman to the left that they mobilize. They vote blue no matter who. But when it's Trump himself running, yeah, the left mobilizes, but it's also, you know, the right, the center right, middle of the road voters, they also mobilize, and for the most part, they'll vote Trump. So during the midterms, I can't really be for sure if California will be more blue, because you also have to keep in mind, I mean, the 2020 riots, it didn't make California any less blue. The entire state burning down did not make California any less blue.
Yeah.
No, that's a good point. And, you know, I think California is a good thing to look at and say, what does it take to make people wake up? I mean, stuff can happen right in front of people there, and they'll stay on the path they're on because Drake is right. They mobilize. Mm-hmm. They stick to it. Nothing deters them. It doesn't matter what's going on. They stay that way. In some ways, I wish Texas was like that, and we've been red for a long time. I hope we stay red for a whole lot longer. But in some cities, I really wish it would switch over just a little bit, because we've had some close calls with elections. Mm-hmm. I think even thinking back, if y'all remember Beto, he had that little quote, hell yes, we're going to take their AR-15s. And I was like, no, you are not. That is exactly how you start a war in Texas. But no, yeah. So in Texas, I don't know about where you're at. It's not really happening here. We've had some protesters about ICE. But in Brownsville, Texas, you know, since I got family over there, I've been told that their stuff just not even airing on the news and on the radio, that, you know, there's some crazy stuff going on in the streets there. They're grabbing people up, deporting them as they should, which that close to the border, you know.
You kind of would expect it.
You would expect it. You know, you think there's a reason we're not seeing what's happening in California involving deportations here in Texas?
I mean, much different culture. I mean, I know in Houston, I'm from Houston, there have been some anti-ICE protests. Thankfully, they didn't turn violent. California, and LA in particular, has a history of violent riots. And the state government kind of just lets them get away with it. I mean, I think the reason why you don't really see that here is because we have a different culture where that's not acceptable. People have guns. And also, you know, if something were to get violent, the state would immediately shut it down. Same goes for, you know, states like Florida. Florida and Texas are, you know, a lot alike in that sense.
Yeah, you're definitely right there. You know, I almost wonder, I mean, clearly there's a stronger presence in California, or you would think. But I know this because Caleb and I went to a James O'Keefe event at the Operation Hope Gala, thanks to Dr. John Thomas and his wife Carrie Thomas here in Lubbock. And they showed us footage of what was happening during the Biden-Harris administration and all the illegals coming in, Border Patrol not doing anything, people cutting through the fence, children being trafficked. I mean, it was eye-opening, shocking, and sad all at once. But do you think we're going to see less people trying to do that in Texas and maybe a harder push towards California as they try and, I guess in their mind, rally behind their people? So what I'm asking is, do you think with immigration going on, since obviously what's happening in California would never fly here in Texas, do you think we're going to see more and more people trying to come in into California, or do you think they'll probably back off for a while due to the escalation?
That's a good question. Because, you know, at that point, you're trying to predict, and the term I'm going to use is migration. Taking a completely different path of migration. That may not be the correct term, but that's a very good question. I know California has a much shorter border with Mexico, so maybe we'll see more of that, like in the western states, New Mexico, Arizona. I know Arizona has a very bad governor. Her name's Katie Hobbs. She doesn't do anything. And you know, obviously California too. I mean, we already see a lot of that in California. It's just, we also see a lot of that in Texas because we have a humongous border with Mexico. And in some parts of Texas, it's practically impossible to, you know, build some sort of structure to keep them out.
Yeah, you're right. And in all honesty, the size of Texas, I mean, literally, you can fit multiple states into the state of Texas. I don't know how they monitor it. I mean, you got to have one. Your system has got to run at such a level to prevent, I'm going to call it migration too, because they're not immigrating in, they're migrating in. Because if they were immigrating in, we wouldn't have a problem with it, because there's a process for that, you know. And thank God, people don't realize this, first of all. Yes, I don't, you know, I think it's incredible that Texas is able to maintain itself with how big the border wall is there. But people often forget, you know, if you or I or Drake were to try to migrate into Russia or North Korea, these other countries, we don't always, not all countries just give you a slap
on the wrist and...
Exactly. You get sent to the gulag, or you get your head cut off, you get shot. There's some horrible penalty And those countries are directly offended. And it's known that that is a serious crime. And it baffles me that Americans don't see it the same way as, hey, they're protecting their country. In our situation, we're not escalating into violence. We're saying, here's your chance. You're a person. You have rights. Here's your opportunity. But you don't see people taking it that way. You have any thoughts on why people don't ever consider that?
I think the reason would be, so take North Korea and South Korea. Two completely different countries, two completely different ideologies. South Korea is incredibly prosperous, very safe. They're not authoritarian at all. Well, okay, well, they did declare martial law, like, what, a year ago? We're not going to get into that.
That's another episode.
If you compare it to North Korea, it's like 1,000, it's 1,000% a better country to live in. Now, take America and Mexico. We kind of share the same ideals. We're part of the, we kind of share like the same Western culture. Yeah, you know, we don't have the same culture, but, you know, Mexico, I wouldn't consider Mexico safe, but compared to, like, you know, countries like South Sudan or Zimbabwe or North Korea, I would much rather live in Mexico. So I think it's that, and also, well, yeah, I think it's purely that. Mexico is not as dangerous. Yes, they have drug cartels, but, I mean, compared to these hyper-militant countries, it's really not all that bad. We're not having border skirmishes with Mexico.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, if we want to go a little bit further, you know, and thank God for this with how we border Mexico, we are lucky and we are blessed that we don't have a Streets of Gaza situation on that border.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when you think about cartel, you think about Homeland Security, and everything else that goes into securing the borders and what's right there at all times, we are very fortunate that we don't have a situation like that here in America.
For sure.
Well, I think it's time to transition into our next topic, the one big, beautiful bill.
The triple B. This is an interesting one.
We've talked about it a little bit on this podcast, but it is just amazing to see what has actually been put on that bill and what's to be expected.
So there are a lot of things like in the big, beautiful bill that I don't necessarily agree with. However, it's a good, reconciliation bill. That's the term we use for, you know, big spending bills like this. So it makes the 2017 tax cuts permanent, expand small business tax deductions by 10%. So right now tax deductions are at 20%. So they'll jump up to 30%. No tax on tips, overtime, and a higher standard deduction for some taxpayers. The bill also aims to ultimately cut mandatory spending programs by approximately $1.7 trillion. I like a lot of things in this bill. I don't completely agree with it. I would like them to cut some more spending, but the fact that they're cutting spending in general, I really like that. I think it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, I think it's important that we just kind of remember this shows that it is possible to have good government, to have conservative budgets, conservative cuts, conservative spending, and it's a step in the right direction. You know, it's not a jump in the right direction, but it's definitely a significant step in the right direction, and a lot of people don't realize. Is the bill supposed to immediately eliminate America's debt? No, not all at once. Nothing's going to do that. You're a fool if you think it would ever happen that way. However, It's designed to ensure that we avoid a major tax increase. That's what the bill is designed to do. And I'm really – I really think it'll accomplish that because, I mean, just as an American that's been under a former Trump administration, then going into the Kamala Harris administration, I mean, things escalated real quick and got real expensive, went off the rails. Trump gets back in office, and suddenly I can afford to buy food again.
Yeah.
What's your take on the bill so far, Caleb?
I absolutely love it. Just kind of like what Kevin said, just the fact that we're lowering the national debt and just trying to recover from what the Biden administration did to us is just a stepping stone to what we can expect in the future, which is nothing but red.
Yeah, I'm surprised, you know, more college students don't really talk about politics because this is a big issue, especially when you consider the EV mandate and all that other stuff that's being tied into this bill. But far and wide, not everyone is going to agree with everything on a bill. But this is overall a good bill. It's conservative, it's helping Americans, it's getting us what we need, and it's a step towards fixing our national debt.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Kind of reiterating, there are a lot more things I would like to see in this bill. However, in politics, you have to take what you can get. You know, you actually have to talk to the other side to get things done. And, you know, honestly, that's the great thing about, you know, living in a republic. You have to speak to your neighbors. You have to. You have no other choice. If you want to, you know, build a fence, you have to speak to your neighbor. Hey, will you pitch in some money? You know, it's fine if I spend slightly more, but can you pitch in something? You know, we both live here. Yeah. So, you know, we're not always going to get what we want, like in a spending bill. And if we did get what we wanted all the time, a big portion of this country would constantly be pissed off and burning half the country down.
You're correct. The last thing we need is to start having wars between states. We need to avoid that at all cost. That would divide America and be a massive step backwards.
Civil War Part 2.
No. So you're in Houston, correct?
I'm in Huntsville.
You're in Huntsville.
Houston, pretty much.
The greater, the Houston area.
Almost a greater Houston area.
So this bill, what do you think are some of the changes that you could see positively in your area from it? What do y'all deal with there? Because West Texas, I know we're all Texas. Texas is so big. West Texas has its own set of issues. I'm sure y'all have your own set.
Well, that's a really good question. In the local area, I'm not sure if, you know, changes in federal spending will really affect too much. However, I do have some family members that own small businesses, so making the tax cuts permanent and also raising the standard deduction on small businesses and the amount of taxes they have to pay, I think that will be a very positive thing. Also, no tax on tips. I guess that will affect the local area because there's lots of restaurants here in Huntsville, at least. So people will be putting a lot more money in their pocket.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on in Huntsville. I have a friend that lives in Katy, Texas, right? So I know here in Lubbock, what's gotten real, real popular is used to you give your waitress, your host, cash, a cash tip. And you'd do the math and write it out, and they'd give you your money back. And then it switched into, no, just put the tip on the receipt. Now you put the tip percent on like an iPad or something like that. And I really have to wonder, now that there's not going to be any tax on tips, are all these companies going to have to go in and adjust everything to account for that? Or are we going to start seeing people reverting back to cash tipping?
Definitely a good perspective. And I feel like more of the smaller businesses, like the mom and pop shops, are definitely going to switch to cash, but a little bit more bigger, smaller businesses are definitely going to stay with the tablets.
Did you know that, and I don't know if your college does this, Drake. If they do, I'd be interested to hear. But did you know here at Tech, in fact, in the library, if you go downstairs and you go to the little shop you can buy Cokes and sandwiches at, They don't take cash no more.
Nowhere on campus.
Yeah.
It's all card.
Is that a thing where you're at, Drake?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, we
and
hardly
not...
even have to talk to... Because we do have some restaurants on campus. We have Chick-fil-A. We have Subway. I know for Chick-fil-A, nobody goes up to the counter to order. There's like these little Grubhub computers that, you know, we punch in what we want. And then we wait 5 minutes and then we have it.
Fancy. We don't have that.
Yeah, we don't have anything like that.
We have to wait in a ginormous line that can take up to like 20 minutes just to get up to the register.
You're living in the future.
Yeah.
It's just for Chick-fil-A. It's just for Chick-fil-A.
You know,
There are a couple more restaurants, but it's a select few.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't there a law where they cannot refuse certain legal tenders, a business, a company? Like, if you have $20 and that's considered U.S. currency, they have to find a way to take it. I've often wondered that about with colleges making their – and this is where my problem with universities and colleges come in. There's a lot of overreach where they can just go in, make their own law, whether it's, hey, you're concealed carrying, but your gun's printing. Well, yeah, that's legal U.S. currency, but we don't have to take it because we say so. And I'm just kind of like, okay, can we get – we need to dial it back a little bit here, because – that's one of my concerns, is we're getting away from being a republic. We're getting away from our American values, federal amendments, constitutional rights. And I really wonder with the big, beautiful bill, when companies realize, hey, now we got to go in and pay someone to go in here and adjust all the programming, you know, maybe that'll, and I doubt it, because I've never seen tipping at Texas Tech. Maybe it's there, maybe I just don't eat on campus enough. I'd have to ask Caleb, is it? But I think we might see a little bit changes on how people take currency at the universities.
I don't think anywhere on campus does tips, but I could be wrong. I haven't been to all the restaurants, because there are quite a few restaurants actually in the dorms. Like, I know there's a Fazoli's in one of the dorms over there by the College of Agriculture, and there's other smaller shops in the dorms. But as far as I know, there's absolutely no tipping.
You're telling me if I sign a piece of paper, or if I would have signed it, I could have been living next door to Fazoli's in my own home?
Yep.
You know, there are some things we're just better left not knowing. I don't need that kind of access. I don't need to know that access exists. Oh, man. All right. So this topic, I'm going to let everyone know now. I don't care if there's a negative view towards what we're fixing to talk about. It's a serious problem, and it needs to be addressed. I've been fighting this here in Lubbock, Texas, and at Texas Tech, and I love my university. Like, I'll proudly stand by my university, and I get excited just like Jody Arrington does. But we've had a really big problem with free speech at Texas Tech, and I wanted to make sure I wasn't picking on my university, and I've reached out to different campuses and talked to different students, and it really seems to be this isn't an isolated incident. This is for universities across Texas and some of them that are in other states too. What is free speech like at your campus?
You know, quite honestly, it's not that restricted here. It's really not. We don't have any free speech zones. Those are what zones that dedicated First Amendment zones.
Yeah, it's like they serve multiple purposes so that they can get away with it, right? But originally, students needed a place to practice free speech. I don't understand that statement myself. I'm just kind of like, wait, you're telling me, okay. But they had the gazebo here, and then, you know, Tech got bigger, and it expanded, and then student groups, student orgs needed a place to table and everything. And my take on it is, okay, let's just stop calling them free speech zones, because we've reached a point universities can say, well, our campus is zoned for free speech, so what you're saying isn't technically true. And then people like me turn around when there's pushback and say, well, here's a lawsuit from 2019, and you're not supposed to have this zone because it's unconstitutional, according to Judge so-and-so. And I think a solution that would better suit universities to avoid these types of lawsuits and discrepancies is just call it the student org road or something creative that just lets people know, hey, you can table here, versus dragging the amendment into it. Because I have a really big problem when you start zoning amendments.
Yeah, I definitely have a problem with that too. But one of the things, I don't know about your university, but here at Tech, in order for you to use the free speech area, you have to make sure that you are signed for a certain day and a certain amount of time to do your free speech. And we have to register with the sub, and we basically say, we're going to be here on this day, this day, this day, from this time to this time. And I feel like it shouldn't be that way. We should just be able to go set up a table and not be able to basically tell the university what we're doing.
Yeah, we don't have any quote-unquote free speech zones here at SAM. I can pretty much go out there any day of the week and set up a table, and I don't have to fear the university telling me to take the table down and stop. We do have dedicated places where if we want to set up a tent, there are dedicated places for that. But I mean, I can just go right by the LSE. If you don't know what the LSE is, it's basically our cafeteria. I can go by the LSE, set up a table there, and just start tabling. You know, unless it's raining. You know, you're crazy if you table when it rains.
Yeah. Wait a minute. No, come on. You gotta respect Lieutenant Dan with that one.
I did that once. I made a mistake of not checking my radar because I do live in Huntsville. I live in Huntsville, and it rains a lot. But one day I made the mistake not checking my radar, and an hour into tabling, it just started pouring.
Yeah, we've definitely experienced that. Yeah, West Texas is you start bringing weather into it. We can have wind one day, and then all of a sudden it's like 102 degrees the next, but snows on the third day. And then on the fourth day, it's raining dirt clods, and then you just start getting a mix of everything. So, we get it.
Y'all had a pretty bad tornado a couple days ago, huh?
Yeah, last week, last Thursday.
You know, it's because Lubbock lets Taco Bell and Taco Villa sit right across the street from each other.
Taco Villa? What's Taco Villa?
Taco Villa is like, oh my God.
The Texas version of Taco Bell.
But so much better.
Yeah,
I think
so
it's
much
better.
Man, I like love more, some Taco Bell.
More authentic Mexican food rather than Taco Bell, rather than your makeshift tacos.
Yeah, it's like
you can get like a box combo for like $6 at Taco Bell, and I mean that's your lunch and dinner.
Okay, he's right. He's got he's got a point there, but I'm gonna find a way to get you one of their beef and cheese, beef and bean burritos,
please understand. Yeah, here in
Huntsville,
we just have Taco Bell and Taco Cabana.
I've had Taco Cabana. I like Taco Cabana.
Never had it. I've never been to Taco Villa. I've only had Rosa's here, and it's pretty good. I do have to say I like Rosa's. They've got pretty good nachos.
Man, okay. So, anyways, even though we're talking about speech, we're utilizing free speech here. one thing we've had a problem with, I guess, in my experience, first of all, at your university, are y'all allowed to table indoors?
No.
All right, so I have a problem with this as for Texas as a whole. So I'm on life-sustaining medicine. With that medicine, I can't be in the sun. I can't be exposed to heat. I can't be essentially exposed to the elements. If my medicine stops working, and it will if my body gets to a certain temperature and I get too hot and I get sick, deteriorate quick, my heart stops. And I run a disability org for students. It's not partisan at all. It's just meant to help them get accommodations, let them know what resources we have here, and to also work as a support group. Because Texas Tech is not very accessible, but most universities, they weren't built with the sick in mind. So I ran into a problem where I said, hey, here's what I have. I need to table, but I'm not the only student with this limitation. Can we have a spot indoors right where they come into the sub so that we're not interfering with anything? We're out of the way. I'm not going to allow anyone to have a voice amplifier tool. We're just going to sit there, greet students, talk to them just like they would walk by us outside, except we won't be in the sun or heat. That way we don't get sick, and then Tech doesn't end up with a fatality of a student by accident due to their medication not working. And I got a lot of pushback for it. They did not want to allow it. They fought hard not to let me have it, and they said, well, you can get a room away from the students. It'll be like on the second floor or something, and y'all can set up your events there. And I was like, no, because now you're not only infringing on the First Amendment because you're telling us we can't practice free speech in a certain area, you're also inhibiting disability access. And they didn't want to talk about it, so I went online and posted about it. And this was before I had even found Tech College Republicans. And then they finally reached out to me when they started getting some negative attention and said, hey, thanks for bringing this to our attention. We'd love to work with you. Where exactly did you have in mind? Please show us. And after that, I got the clearance to have it. But just the fact that I got that kind of pushback, it was just mind-blowing because, in my opinion, I wasn't asking for anything extreme. I think it was a reasonable accommodation. And I'd have been even open if they could have found a way to, you know, maybe put us somehow in a shaded area. You know, as long as it wasn't really hot outside because of my medicine, I'd have been fine. And so I've kind of wondered about that ever since then. And then right after that, we started having Justice for the Palestine, Tech Communist. Yeah, we have an org for that too.
Yeah.
Tech Communist.
Yes, that is a thing.
We had a similar org a couple years back. It was the Democratic Socialists. Very creative name.
We have those. In fact, that's how I got bipartisan at Texas Tech during the student government election. There was some stuff they agreed with, and they were like, okay. It didn't mean I agreed with everything that they – or for. I really don't. But when it came to like making education accessible for patients and people with rare conditions and disabilities, they were really for it, especially when I threw veterans into it. They were like, well, now we just can't say no to that. And, you know, it just, going back, you know, to the Justice for the Palestine students, we've had, I don't know if this happens at your college, but when we're tabling, we've been spat at. We've had people come up to us and tell us we support pedophiles and rapists just because we're Republicans. But God forbid if we say anything back.
Yeah.
And then we've also had people threaten us. People that claim that they're veteran or ex-military. And it's over anti-Semitic stuff. It's over the Palestinian, the Hamas protesters. That's a big thing. In fact, there's a guy in Lubbock running against Jody Arrington, or he will be running against him. And he's always spotted with these groups. And I don't know if you pay attention to Instagram that much, but we had a deal where Texas Tech Forum, the Tech Communist, Tech Secular, Justice for the Palestine, who else is there? Gay Straight Alliance, Young Democratic Socialist of America, and maybe a few others that I'm just not remembering. There's too many. There's a lot of orgs here. They pulled together and got Democrats of Texas or Democrats for Texas online, got a Texas Tech chapter going, partnered with a lot of people from Planned Parenthood. They have a strong presence on campus, by the way, here. And they got together, set this up, and then they've been promoting their democracy. There are no kings in democracy, but their first big protest, something we would have never got. Caleb couldn't have asked for it. I couldn't have asked for it. They got an event hosted outside of the free speech zone on campus. Normally, you have to go off campus.
Mm-hmm.
So not only were they granted to go off campus, or not off campus, but out of the zone, their little logo was a crown bleeding, which we all know what that looks like and symbolizes. And it was held the day before Easter. And I called that anti-Semitic activity, and I have my reasons for it. I have other stuff I brought in, too. And it disturbed me enough that I reached out to different Republican organizations and reported the incident to the Texas GOP chair, Abraham George. And I was like, look, if they can do this and we're going to continue being restricted, like we even made the news about it, why we didn't support it and what it's like for us on our end. If you're going to let them start doing stuff like that, you've got to accept our stuff too. You can't just promote Democrats and then not let the Republican students have the same access. I mean, is that something at your college that happens?
You know, we don't have a college Democrats. And Democratic Socialists, they died out. Oh, okay, we did have a college Democrats. They died out during COVID. So pretty much, College Republicans, Turning Point USA, and Bearcats for Life. That's a pro-life group. We're the only political orgs on campus. I guess there is the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion organization. I looked at that on our little organization page. I was like, what? But yeah, we're pretty much the only ones left. So we don't really even see any protesters. People protesting. I mean, there's this one pro-Palestinian woman, you know, standing on the wall. You know, she had a sign, but, you know, it didn't have anything derogatory on it. You know, I didn't necessarily see anything wrong with it. I'm like, oh, there's a pro-Palestinian person right there.
See, that's so weird, because we even had these people come on to Tech and they were telling people, you know, that tech students were idiots and chanting a bunch of obscenities. And I don't know if you've seen it, but I have like a black duster that I wear with my black hat. And I literally get stopped in the hallway and they're like, are you cosplaying as the Undertaker? And I'm like, no, but I'll take a photo if you want one. And I can't believe that's a thing.
He's the tech Undertaker.
So I'm walking up to the sub, which essentially that's our cafeteria thing, but it's where the dean of students.
We just call it the student union building.
Yeah, student union building sub.
It's got like 3 floors and it's got pool tables and ping pong tables. And then the ground floor is basically all the food and cafeterias. And then the upstairs are more like the groups on campus and some of the places that you can find
student
resources.
Government and all that. Yeah. But anyways, I got out of my truck and I was walking. I think I was trying to go to the library that day, but they're right across from each other. So you got to walk in between them. And this group of individuals stop what they're doing, see me. One of them, I don't know, he just looked like he was having a bad day, and he started coming up to me real quick, so I stuck my hand in my pocket, and his buddy says, hey, you, cowboy, you got a six-shooter on you? And I said, no, and his friend starts walking towards me again. He had stopped when his friend said that. I said, it's a 5-shot, and his friend stopped, and he's like, leave him alone. I don't know what they were planning that day, but I go into the library later, come back out, and find out they had punched another student in the face.
Wow.
Yeah, so I don't know what I was in for, but, you know, God bless Texas right there, my Second Amendment. I was ready, but I'm really glad that nothing involving myself escalated to that. It's unfortunate another student was harmed, but nothing happened. Administration didn't get involved.
So why exactly... What was their purpose? What were they there for?
I don't know. They will come onto campus ever so often, and they'll like talk as if they're Christians promoting God, but then they get
groups.
Yeah. It's almost like you guys kind of remind me of the KKK with how you act.
Yeah, we do have groups similar to that. Come on a campus, shout obscenities. Yeah, that's really the worst thing that will happen, but I mean, nobody has put their hands on anyone else yet.
And maybe that's just Texas. I would really be interested to see what the current chair of the Texas Federation of College Republicans sees on the Austin campuses. Ooh. I'm just curious, because she... And I don't know. I haven't asked her. She's unfortunately sick right now, and our thoughts and prayers are with you. But she does go to a Austin college, I would assume, unless she's an online student.
No, she's in my chapter.
She's in your chapter. Okay. Yeah. Okay, well, then I would have to find someone else to talk to, because I'm real curious, you know, regarding freedom of speech. How does that retain to pro-Hamas protesters on campuses? And, you know, and where is the line teetering on the edge of domestic terrorism? Because there's been some real interesting stuff happening across the U.S.
Yeah, for sure. That's a really good question. Because if you're just protesting about what's going on in Palestine, go ahead. Like, be my guest. Like, you go protest against that war. But if you're openly supporting Hamas, that's a completely different issue right there, in my view.
Yeah. There, this is a very controversial topic to talk about, but A week before last year's, not this past spring, but the year before spring convention, like a week before it had started, the University of Austin had a Palestinian protest, and like 12 students got arrested by the Austin police. And I remember watching it on the news and just thinking, this is where I'm heading in the following week. And it was just wild to see just the fact that they allowed that kind of stuff to actually happen. But thank God for the Austin police that actually showed up.
Yeah, you know, because if you're going to, you know, protest, you know, for a cause, you know, like I said, be my guest. But if you're going to start getting violent and start, you know, shouting anti-Semitic or anti anything slurs or slogans at people, then I mean, that's we can't allow that. We can't. I think that's completely unacceptable behavior. That goes way, way too far.
Yeah, I mean, and I could easily tie all of that into what's happening in LA right now.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Free speech is not meant to insinuate riots. It's not meant to harm people. It's meant to do what we're doing right now, to have a discussion, to have uncomfortable conversations, to have controversial discussions over, you know, topics that most people try to avoid. They don't want to approach. They don't want to touch them. And a lot of times, you won't even see universities touching some of these subjects. And I think it was last year, too. And I want to say on the Dallas, Texas Tech campus, Dallas gets a lot of, or had, it may not now, but it had a lot of pro-Hamas protests going on. And I remember one of them was at the Texas Tech area over in there. I don't know where it's at over there, but it was getting sent to my feed like crazy on Instagram. And there were cops surrounding everybody. And the students, they weren't really doing anything. The only thing they were doing really, in my opinion, they were really going out of their way. I think there were some megaphones and stuff like that. And so then, you know, okay, well, now you've got students trying to sleep, and you are disrupting them that way. But I don't think anything really violent escalated out of that. I think generally, except for in LA's situation, which is just tragic that that's happening in America, Texas officers, they're pretty good at de-escalating situations. They'll use force when needed, but we don't really see a lot of massive riots happening here in Texas, at least not like that. I'm keeping my eyes on what's happening with the Liberty County and the Muslim protesters and stuff like that, but as far as at a college campus, I haven't really seen that type of escalation here in Texas. We have had active shooters, don't get me wrong. That's been a thing at Tech. We even had a police officer killed once, I think. But again, when you get into freedom of speech like that, I think the line is, you know, as long as you're not telling people to hurt each other, you're not encouraging violence, I think that's kind of the line. Unless you're in a conversation where you're like, okay, well, now we got to defend our country. And I think that's where Trump's getting a lot of flack.
Yeah, definitely keeping it civil is the bottom line to keeping a good protest, is keep it civil, no violence, and make sure, just to make sure you get your voice out. I mean, obviously that's what the whole point of a protest is, but if you don't keep it civil, then you're going to get some sort of backlash from it.
For sure, for sure. We did have, and this wasn't necessarily, you know, violent, it was just vandalism. So we work very closely with our local Republican Party. That's the Walker County Republican Party, and they have their office in, I don't want to say downtown Huntsville, because there is no downtown, it's Huntsville, but I guess it's the city center. And they had a big Trump flag on their little office building. Well, like at 2 a.m., there's a video of like a white truck, white pickup truck with the ladder in the back, pulling up, and these people sprayed the spray painted on the Trump flag. And I think it said like "Dump Trump" or something like that. And they never caught the individuals who did it, but yeah, my condolences to the Walker County Republican Party's flag. Very unfortunate.
We've had similar stuff like that. I don't think we've had an actual attack or vandalism on the GOP in that sense. What we generally get are people stealing each other's signs, putting way too many signs. Yeah, we haven't really seen stuff like that since the pandemic-ish era. And I mean, at that point, everything was just crazy. I was in the hospital for most of it, flatlined, woke up to Tiger King playing and was stuck on the TV and started asking God, what did I do? But, yeah.
Tell me, does your campus have a Yik Yak group?
Yes, we do.
What is a Yik Yak?
So, let me explain Yik Yak. It's basically a anonymous messaging social media group only for college campuses. So Texas Tech actually has one. You can basically go on there, complain about your neighbors in the dorms, or complain about your roommates or anything that's going on campus. You can basically anonymously talk about it without getting censored and basically being recognized for who you are and what you just said.
Yeah, so Kevin, can you see the issue with that?
It can get pretty wild sometimes.
Yeah, I can see multiple issues of that. At what point did we get to where if you want to utilize free speech, you have to be hidden to use it? Like, what's going on? Why did we move free speech online like that? Why is it? There's a lot there.
Well, yeah, that's
What's up?
That's a good question. Like, why must we be anonymous? Well, if you want to make violent threats or say outlandish things, anonymity, however you say that word, that's a big word.
Anonymity.
Yeah, what Kevin said. That can be a very useful tool to do that. Because right after like the flag was vandalized, you know, someone took a picture of it, and I checked Yik Yak, and I saw everyone talking about it. I'm like, that's how I found out about it. So then I texted the chair. I'm like, hey, what happened here? What's going on? But I saw like all these college students like just cheering it on. I don't think it's very, I don't think there's very many of them, but they're loud. They're loud and they're proud.
So, do you know the app called Nextdoor?
Yes. My mom has it.
Well, we have an issue like that in Lubbock where primarily the Democrats and socialists, communists, they're really active on Nextdoor. And so, you know, I can't talk about my university. I can't promote anything Republican. I've tried, I think successfully, I posted about a town hall that Ana Menjarez, she's a chaplain here. She held one over the LISD bonds. By the way, feel free to check out our video from last semester.
It was amazing.
That is
crazy.
It's like
an hour long, but it is totally worth it.
Long story short, this guy, we opened it to the public, and because that was fair, and we were talking about the LISD bond. Now, what happened, we didn't know was going to happen. We let everyone come on for yes and no, and this will all make sense here in a minute. And we separated them on different days because I thought best practice, let's not have both happen on the same night. That way nobody starts arguing. Something else happened. We had a guy show up and LISD ran out of the building avoiding questions about the school bond. After I got some documents circulating showing who the donors were for the bond, who all was endorsing it, what the budget looked like, and all this crazy stuff that I think they're called Texas Transparency Project had sent me. They've been pretty cool to me, and so I was like, oh, well, the citizens deserve to see this. And as soon as I tried to post that stuff on Nextdoor, I got censored so fast. It's just crazy the way that works. And going back to the college thing, this is another problem I have, and it's for another episode, but just universally, I think colleges, by their practices, by their policies, by their operations and systems, are essentially purposely churning out a lot of liberal-minded students and students that no longer support their country. And I'll give you a small example. And this has nothing to do with our university. This is just in general. A lot of universities practice what you call running in a block when you run for student government. I'm against that for multiple reasons. Number one, when you're part of a student government, you have a budget that you run on. You get a bunch of these students together, they pool their money, they can far exceed that budget, and then what happens is your independents, your Republicans and conservative voters that are actively involved politically in the county and city parties and everything like that, getting visibility becomes very difficult. And we'll talk about the SGA election y'all endorsed me in, because there was some funny stuff that just happened on campus, like the explosions everyone saw, and it was crazy. But my opinion is that setup teaches students unethical practices like collusion and a whole bunch of other issues under that umbrella. Because then when you watch how they try to interact with cities, a lot of them, they don't know how to get involved unless they're doing it the way they're taught. And then you end up with people like, what, Caleb, what's the woman's name that she's from New York? What's her, Drake, do you know her name, who I'm talking about?
From New York?
Yeah.
She's in Congress?
I think so.
AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Yeah, you get people like her. She's a good example. Elected in different spots, and I think that's a lot of the problem. And then you also get what we call, I don't know if y'all have a problem with what we call rhinos here. that's, you're essentially teaching them, because then they get money thrown at them, they get people investing in them, and God forbid if they have an independent thought that doesn't fall in line with the powers that be, because suddenly they're not in good standing, they get scholarships pulled from them. And when you step back from it and just kind of look at it, you're like, what are they teaching these young adults? What are they really teaching students here? Because then a lot of them, you know, it just seems like they come out almost indoctrinated. And that's a strong word to use. But, you know, when I've talked to some of them, even from other colleges, it's like, no, I don't believe that way, because I have a mind of my own and I know my rights and I can't be bought. It's just, I don't know what y'all's take on that is, but I'd be interested in kind of hearing that in regards to what we're talking about.
Yeah, honestly, like I should be more involved in student government, but I'm honestly just not, like, interested me. But I should probably start getting more involved in it. Because I am president of College Republicans, so it's kind of my duty to know, but it's just not something I've ever been too deeply involved in.
Isn't most of the student government on most universities, like, their meetings are public?
As far as I know, I think so. But
yeah,
it could
I know our student government's meetings are public.
Yeah, because I'm working on a document for the Federation, and I'm not going to say too much, but there are one of the initiatives in it is it calls for more involvement once the organization chapters are of a certain undetermined capacity, because I think we should be involved. I think we should be practicing, you know, parliamentary procedure and all this stuff that aligns directly with what we're supposed to be doing. And I don't know if maybe it was the pandemic, but I do know that right after pandemic, it was kind of like a nail in the coffin for a lot of political orgs. It didn't matter what side you fell on. Mm-hmm. And I think we have a real opportunity to turn a lot of student governments red in the future.
Well, I think so too. Yeah, I did ask one candidate running for student body president to come speak to us, but we never really had the time. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I think they were more on the left-leaning side. Just she personally came up to me and, you know, we're talking. She's like, oh, you're the president of the College Republicans, right? I'm like, yeah. Yeah, I am him. And we start talking, and I just thought she's a very sensible person, possibly right-wing, but now looking at her actual platform, it didn't, or looking at the people she surrounded herself with, it didn't really appear that way.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure, and I'm fine if I was, when I went to the College Republicans, I didn't even know they were a thing, and I think that's a huge red flag for us. I didn't know Young Conservatives of Texas was a thing. I knew a little bit about Turning Point USA, but their presence on tech, I didn't really know much about, and come to find out they were falling apart anyway.
Every once in a while we'll have an event with Turning Point, like they'll have a special guest, but for the most part, they don't actually have a active Turning Point group on campus.
Yeah, I've tried to get them back online. I'm sure at some point they'll pop back up, but I'll probably reach out to Charlie Kirk's people at some point and be like, I know I've got a lot going on, but we could use some help over here at Tech. But yeah, I think as Republican students, even conservative students, I think it's our duty to get involved, not only civically, federally, but institutionally. I think we need to get involved. And I think if we got students, Republicans and conservatives, majority in student government that weren't afraid to push back, that weren't afraid to call for changes, you know, regardless of relationships with administrations and university presidents, I bet you we could see some big changes and calls being made at universities across Texas.
For sure, for sure.
What's up, Caleb?
Shall we share the amazing news that we were going to do last episode, but decided to cancel it? Have you heard about what went on at Trump's house in Mar-a-Lago?
Oh, my God.
No, I did not.
Get ready for this story. So, about a few months ago, back in December, apparently there was a Texas man who hopped the wall and basically got a trespassing warning, and he went on his way. And just a few weeks ago, he hopped the same wall trying to get into Trump's house. But since the Secret Service was protecting the house, he got charged with trespassing. And he told the Florida police that he was trying to preach the gospel of Christianity to Trump and maybe marry his granddaughter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was a pretty good read for that Monday morning. I had a good laugh and I shared it to Kevin. I said, have you seen what's been going on? And it was wild.
That's
has Trump considered it?
I don't know.
That's one of those rare examples where I'm still proud to be a Texan, but I look at it and I'm like, they're from the boonies.
Yeah.
So I think this is an interesting topic, especially because I don't know if you guys are paying attention to the candidates for 2026. We've got some pretty young people running for Senate in different positions. One of them is one of our guests in the future. He's going to be running for lieutenant governor. So I kind of wanted to touch on this. What do you feel the future is regarding next generation Republicans and the future of the Republican Party?
Well, Mr. Kevin, I hope the future looks like me. No, I'm just kidding. you know, I'm very optimistic about our generation of Republicans, and even Gen X. You know, like my parents. You know, for some reason, you don't see many Gen X in positions of powers. It's mainly still just baby boomers. But I think Gen X, not really millennials, and Gen Z. I think. We're very promising in terms of continuing Republicanism, what our party's about, the Party of Lincoln. I'm very, very optimistic. And, I mean, even a lot of people in college are Republicans. They're very, very smart. They're passionate about what they do, what they believe, and they want to get things done. So I'm hoping that we can see some real change come 10, 15 years from now.
I think you're right. I think what I've really noticed with the, I call them next generation, future generation Republicans, they really seem to have gotten tired with just talking. They're tired of lies. They want the truth. They're tired of cover-ups. They're tired of laws getting leveraged in ways they weren't supposed to be. They're tired of loopholes. They're tired of there not being accountability. And they're tired of nobody taking action to the point they are starting to take action. Whether you talk about the Federation chair, she took action at the Capitol, and it was real interesting to see, even though her and I were debating, that was, I didn't know what to expect. I got a lot out of that, and I really was proud of what I was seeing. And Caleb, you missed out. You should have been there. It was great. Not all of it, but there was some stuff.
That was pretty fun.
It was a lot of fun. It was good to interact. And just to know that you have these future politicians getting in positions where they're learning parliamentary procedure, they're learning how to write legislation, what's good legislation, what's bad legislation, and then applying it and synthesizing that information and replicating it, I think that's a great thing. And I think we've needed that for a long, long time. not just in Texas, but in the U.S. in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, I mean, have we even had a... We haven't had a Gen X president yet, huh? I don't think Obama was Gen X.
No, he wasn't. He was not Gen X.
I just think it's crazy. Gen X is getting older and older. And we've still yet to have, like, a Gen X president.
I'm looking. Okay, so what I just pulled up. All right, so disclaimer here. I don't know if what I just read is true or not because it was on a social media platform that I don't really always trust. It tried to say Obama was Gen X. I don't think he was Gen X. I could be wrong. I mean, if he was, that's interesting. But if we haven't had one, that's really interesting. you're right. Gen X is getting older and older. And even trying to think back, I personally don't think we've had a Gen X unless I get proven wrong here. And if I do, I do. It's not a big deal. Politico is saying that he is the first Gen X president.
Well, so it says boomers were born between 1946 and 1964. Obama was born in 1961. For some reason, the AI overview, when I searched up on Google, was saying, no, Barack Obama is not considered a baby boomer, even though it says that baby boomers are born between 1946 and 1964. And it says here that he was born in 1961. So it's AI.
See, it's getting so hard to tell. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I think this whole AI thing, and I'm not against AI, but I think we're getting to the point we're going to end up having a whole new subset of legislation come in and come in hard to control what's on the internet and put some law and order in place.
Oh, yeah, we're already seeing that.
You talking about the one Abbott signed?
No, I'm talking about the one that I think it was Melania or Ivanka Trump really advocated for, and it was against AI deepfakes, like the really bad AI deepfakes.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I think Ted Cruz might have been a big advocate for that, too. I think I listened to him speak on it a little bit. That's definitely interesting. Yeah, and you're right. It is something that is happening actively. Do you think, and I know it's possible, but I'm going to be careful with my words here because I don't want to, I'm for the Republican Party, but I don't want to get accused of mudslinging here. Do you think next generation Republicans will eventually start taking offices because they're tired of not seeing action and they're starting to take action?
I mean, my generation of Republicans, and I can name drop some congressmen if you want me to, but we're very tired of seeing, these quote unquote principled Republicans going against the big beautiful bill because they're not getting everything they wanted. Okay, you want spending cuts, but you don't want these spending cuts. You want all the spending cuts. But I think people can narrow it down when I say principled Republicans going hard against this bill. Really, it makes no sense to me why they are so against this bill. When They didn't go this hard against anything Biden's ever done, but when Trump gets in office, every little thing he does, it's not enough for these individuals.
You know what? Now that he says that, thinking back, I'm kind of like, you know, Biden just kind of did things. I mean, yeah, we fought him, but just kind of looking back at things with Trump, you're right. And that's where, you know, then we get into, I talked to someone earlier today about this, that's really, he seems like he's a big fan, first of all, of the Texas Federation of College Republicans. Second of all, he loves what we're doing with this podcast. But we were talking about corruption in government and in parties. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing a lot of when we talk about stuff like that, you know. Now, I'm not coming out and saying, oh, Elon Musk is corrupt. I'm not getting into any of that. In fact, I took a step back from that little tea party between him and Trump.
That was a mess.
That's a hot mess. But I think when you have a good bill, you know, and people don't agree with it, I think that there's a red flag in their character and their priorities. And I've always been of the opinion, don't get into politics because you want to get money. You know, good conservative policies and conservative bills, conservative politics, the side effect of that can be wealth. It's not always going to be. But when it happens, it's usually a good side effect from being conservative. You know, that said, I don't really understand why they oppose this bill so much. I've read the whole, well, you're going to put us $3 trillion more dollars in debt. Okay, but we're going to have a lot more presidents. We're going in debt for other reasons too. When are we not going to be going in debt? I'd rather be going in debt for $10 trillion versus $10 trillion. And the fact that I think Caleb and I talked about this on an unaired episode, there was a $806 million difference, or is it? Yeah.
So the national debt changes almost every day, and Fox News on their business website, they keep track of it every day, and they will basically tell you how it's changed within the last couple of days. And the days that we were watching, so we could put it on our episode, it had changed. It had gone up like $806 million. And then the next day, the very next day, it went down $706 million. It's kind of crazy to watch, actually watch Fox Business and actually see the changes between every day and how it frequently changes.
Yeah, that's definitely, I think it shows we've got some of the right people in the right places. I think we've still got work to do. I mean, we're always going to have work to do. You know, if you don't have work to do, something's probably gone wrong. But, you know, that said, what is, and this is talking about the future of the Republican Party. Our numbers here at Tech have gotten, unfortunately, low. Now, I came in out of nowhere and started helping. But I'm curious, next gen-wise, what is the college Republican presence like on your side of Texas, in your parts?
Well, we are a bigger chapter, but that's not really saying much because we only have like, so officially we only have like 15 members, but we only have 9 of those members regularly show up to meetings. However, over the summer I've had quite a few people join our GroupMe, so I'm really hoping that what I'm doing with my chapter is ultimately positive, and we can see membership skyrocket. Because, you know, when one person shows up, you know, that person may have, like, four friends they want to bring along. So, I mean, I see people as, I see each person as incredibly valuable to this organization, because they're one more volunteer, one more friend I can have, and that person can have four friends who, you know, follow them to College Republicans.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, you talk about next generation Republicans, the future of the Republican Party. I mean, look at Barron Trump. There's a major Republican. And, you know, I'm sure in his circle, because we've all got our own circles. I'm convinced there's probably future leaders there. I know we've got future leaders here, especially with the work I'm doing between the chapter, the organizations, the GOP, and a lot of stuff that the Federation will see in our state board meeting that I am doing my best to get put together. I think I'm on section 4 or 5 out of 15, but I'm knocking them out as fast as I can. It's just a lot with going to the hospital constantly. I do see this next generation of Republicans being a generation of leaders. And I really think the next 10 to 15 years are going to reflect that, especially because a lot of times, if you go on Facebook and you start looking at other cities and their GOPs and stuff, and there's nothing wrong with this, but a lot of the photos I see are people like ages 50 and up. It's really hard to find people that are like ages 18 to 40. They're there, but it seems like they're really harder to find. And I think the next generation, we're going to see that more and more. I mean, we've even got she'll be 21 later this year on our state board. I think that's great. And I think getting these younger generations involved and getting them caring, it's not even that they have to be involved, it's just getting them to care about politics again, because people don't realize how important politics are. They dictate what's going to happen with your future. If you plan on being a homeowner, having kids, you're going to pay taxes. Maybe one day Texas will get rid of the whole homeowner tax thing, but property tax. I really think the upcoming generation is going to put a lot of people out of office and start bringing ages 40 below the legislation they've been calling for years.
Well, here's hoping. Yeah, I mean, Gen Z, you saw the election results in 2024. You saw the age demographics, how they voted, right?
Yes, so, I saw the 24 ones.
So Gen Z was incredibly conservative in the way they voted, up and down the ballot. You know, they still, Gen Z in general, they still voted for, hang on, I may be wrong, but I'm pretty sure Gen Z in general still, you know, voted for Kamala Harris, but it was like a 10-point difference. 10 points is a lot, but when we start talking about, like, younger generations, you know, between 18 and 25, 10 points really isn't that significant of a number. I mean, normally you see younger generations vote overwhelmingly for the left. But this time around, that just wasn't the case.
I think, just as a whole, I think younger generations are slowly waking up, realizing what's happening around them. I mean, it's pretty hard to ignore what happens if you live in LA right now. Well, Drake, thanks for coming on the show with Riding Right with the Raiders. Is there anything you'd want to tell the younger college students getting involved and encourage future politicians, Republicans, conservatives where you go?
Well, for all the college Republicans and anyone involved in an organization like that, keep doing what you're doing. If you're thinking about becoming involved, do it. I think it's a great idea. You know, you'll look back on this time in your life and you'll say that you did something. And you'll also make a lot of great friends along the way. So, you know, if you're a college student, you know, the social life is incredibly important. And College Republicans is not lacking in that aspect.
Oh, no. I would definitely argue the College Republicans is where the party's at.
Oh, for sure.
We always try and have a good time everywhere we go. And thank you for joining us today. And we hope to have you back on at some point. We've got a big list of guests, but we'll eventually have you back on. And I guess we'll see y'all next time.
We'll see y'all next time. Thank you for riding right with the Raiders. Have a good one.